because a church in a village near York has been awarded over £15,000 from the National Lottery Heritage Fund to explore its history of inclusivity. The graveyard at St Thomas's Osbaldwick is the final resting place of Eliza Raine, who died in 1860. She was the first girlfriend of Anne Lister, known as Gentleman Jack, a relationship immortalised in Sally Wainwright's BBC drama of the same name. But there are other surprises too, showing that inclusivity isn't a modern invention. Let's talk now to the Reverend Yon Noble, who's the priest in charge. Thanks ever so much for being with us this morning. Hello.
Morning.
So the present day St Thomas is an inclusive church. Everyone's welcome. Why did you decide to investigate the church's history of inclusivity?
Well, it's really about exploring our identity, who we are, what makes us special and unique, and how we can best serve our local community. So it was a process of exploring our vision. And as part of that, we signed up to the Inclusive Church Network. And then we started looking into our local history and heritage and found out, indeed, that we'd always been a place to welcome people that society struggled to find a place for, if you know what I mean. And really quite striking stories. Mary Ward, a Catholic nun who was buried in our churchyard in Protestant England, in a time when Catholics weren't allowed to be buried in consecrated ground. And I heard you just mention Eliza Raine, the first girlfriend of Anne Lister. But there are two more graves of members of the what we now call the LGBTQ community. William Hutchinson and Richard Wright lived together in great union as partners. It says on their gravestone. It's sort of like, you know, a code for what we now understand as a gay relationship, but they weren't allowed to openly say that. But there again, they are buried in our churchyard, so we're really quite proud of having that inclusivity in our DNA, if
That's
you wish.
That's really interesting. I wonder if you've sort of pondered about what it is about the church and maybe the community that surrounds it that has fostered that kind of sense of live and let live for so long?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I think we were a bit of an outskirts of York. I mean, we weren't really included in the city of York until sort of the 1970s, but we were close to York. So in a way, that might have been slightly a refuge for some people. The other thing is, and you know, this is not a happy story, but there were two mental health asylums in our village opposite the church, and the residents from those who lived in the asylums did come to worship, and if they died would be buried in the churchyard. So Eliza Raine, for instance, even though we now celebrate her as a lesbian, we also need to consider that she was basically locked up and considered mentally ill because nobody knew what to do with her. What is more, she was of mixed race as well. She was half Indian. So can you imagine her, you know, absolutely struggling to fit into society and therefore being put in an asylum and therefore being, you know, buried in our churchyard. That's sort of the story of Eliza Raine there.
So it's interesting, actually, because you sort of it sort of starts off as this this journey of, you know, isn't this wonderful on these, these positive stories of inclusivity. But then when you kind of go a bit deeper, actually, it also speaks to the lack of inclusivity at the time, the fact that
so many people
were cast aside and considered less than.
And the two gentlemen that I mentioned earlier, they had money, and money offered a sense of security, if you were of the LGBT community, as we know with Anne Lister herself, of course. So there's different aspects to be explored there, but it is really striking that these people have all ended up in the churchyard, and apparently whoever the local vicar was in those days didn't say, no, you can't have a churchyard burial because, you know, your life hasn't been entirely up to scratch according to the Christian moral standards of the time or whatever. Everyone was welcome. You know, even a famous Catholic, that could have got the vicar in quite some trouble, I would imagine.
I want to know more about this vicar. I just think that's a fascinating... And this is the thing as well, that the rich seam of history that you get from graves, and the way that you can use that as a starting point to really uncover the day-to-day lives of people. Because we hear so much about the great and good, don't we? You know, who had been diarised and written about. And actually, it's so fascinating to hear about regular people living quite exciting lives and interesting lives and challenging lives.
Yeah, and you know, sadly, Eliza Raine's gravestone just says Eliza Raine with her dates, but we have uncovered her stories in different ways. But some of the other gravestones, like the one of the Hutchinson and Wright couple, you know, the way it's described is that they lived in partners in great union and fidelity or something like that, you know, and that they were buried. Actually, they were, you know, one of them died 30 years before the other one, and they still want to be buried in the same grave. It's so obvious to us now what was going on there. But they sort of had to sort of have coded messages on their gravestone to tell the world about it.
But it's also, it's like a final act of rebellion as well, isn't it? You know, to do that, which is, it's extraordinary.
It is. It was a very specific request that they would be buried in the same grave. You know, and like you say, that would have no doubt have been frowned upon. But yeah, they were protected by the money that they had. They could do what they wanted. What would have happened to all those other people that were living in the asylum and that also have their graves in our churchyard, which are mostly unmarked, you know? So many stories to explore. And thankfully now we can speak about it openly and we can invite our community in and help us tell that story. So we're doing a project where we're making an artwork and we're inviting the LGBT community and the local Catholic community and just people from the village to come and help us make that artwork in a way that is authentic and that gives them voice. You know, not just us telling the story, but really, you know, involving all the different stakeholders in the process.
So you're at the beginning of this process. So how long do you think it'll take?
It's well, some parts of it are ongoing. So we're doing oral history interviews. We're about thinking about 15 interviews that we want to record, and we've done 8. And there's no real deadline for that. So anyone who we discover who's got an interesting story to tell about Oswald Wick, we'll interview. We'll have a local history exhibition sometime in September. And we plan to go back to the National Lottery, who have awarded us this money, to put in a larger bid once we have established how we're going to interpret this history. So, for instance, should there be a blue plaque on the wall? Should there be some kind of information about the asylum in the churchyard to remember those who are buried there from the asylum? You know, should we do more in terms of mental health and awareness, things like that. So it's an ongoing thing. The artwork, people are welcome to come and help with that. That's going to finish before the exhibition, which is in September. So we're all looking at sort of the end of the year to open a new chapter of the journey. It's not stopping.
An ongoing thing. It's brilliant. Thank you so much for telling us all about it. Really, really fascinating. That's the Reverend John Noble at St Thomas's Church in Oswald Wick, near York, awarded over £15,000 from the National Lottery Heritage Fund to work with the local community to celebrate its history of radical inclusion. We heard some of that just then.